And so this is the Wayward Podcast, getting right into it. I want to try something a little different this time. So we're going to be dividing this episode into two segments. And for the first half, I'm going to just be talking the shit. So this episode, it's me, Toshi, and...
And me, Richard.
Hey. So what has been going on recently with you?
With me?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, not much. Just... working my way through long RPGs and even longer visual novels.
Oh yeah, we'll be getting into visual novels later. Likewise, things have been going pretty normal for me. Pretty much going autopilot. I've been doing more translating stuff, just like that. But going into news, just straight into news for Japan, we've got a few topics to talk about. One, which is probably the most, I don't know how interesting this would be for people outside of Japan, but people who are familiar with Japanese music have, or I guess Japanese pop culture, have probably heard of the name SMAP.
Mm-hmm.
It is a boy band.
Yep. Japanese boy band.
Well, actually, they've kind of... I think right now the top one is Arashi.
Right, but yeah.
It's
not SMAP. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for the late '90s, for the aughts, it was SMAP. Like they were like I guess you could call them the Backstreet Boys of Japan.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, like even you know, like they have the New Year's music concert every year. Yeah, of course they're headlining it.
Yep.
They headlined it this year too.
Yep.
I mean, SMAP is SMAP. They have what, two TV shows a week?
Yep. It's a group of five members, consisting of five members, and each of them, like as a group, they're the group called SMAP. But each member individually has their own careers outside of just doing pop songs and stuff like that. Because
aren't all of them actors? I seem to think they all are.
I think every single one of them has been in TV dramas and movies.
Yeah.
In some form or another. Probably the most famous is Takuya Kimura, but
yeah.
they've all had their fair share in movies and whatnot.
Yep,
so
yep.
Like they're all actors, I guess the Japanese word is talents. They're all celebrities in their own right. And they were, you know, the quintessential Japanese boy band. They're all the members.
I would say they still are. They are what you think of.
Well, they're all over 40, but they're
still... right. Oh no, that's kind of the whole point.
Yeah, that is. That's
once you're a boy band, you are a boy band until the day you die.
Yeah.
Welcome to Japan, people.
Which kind of shook up the news when they announced that they were splitting up.
Yeah.
And
who was staying?
Okay, so what happened? Do you know all the details of what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay, but what happened is, to break it down, is that they work for the production company Johnny's Entertainment.
Also known as the most evil corporation in Japan.
One of them, yes. But yeah, in terms of pop culture and media and stuff like that, they are... They're Satan. I wouldn't call them God.
They're Satan.
They're Satan.
You have to work with them. You don't want to, and they own your soul. Yeah, pretty much.
You cannot cross them. They are because they own what we were talking about, SMAP. They also own Arashi. They own like pretty much any major name boy band label they own.
Right.
And what happened was that there was a power struggle within the upper echelons, where the president wanted his the vice president, she wanted her daughter to take over.
Yeah, something like that.
And the manager of SMAP wanted that position. So there was basically a power struggle with that. And the vice president basically said, "It's going to be my daughter. If you don't like it, get out." Because in all extremely powerful companies, I think it's not an exaggeration to say all extremely powerful powerful companies in Japan, the top brass are all family.
Yeah, they tend to be.
I used to work for a karaoke place where everybody below a managerial level was like normal people, different, you know, people from all walks of life, and then everybody in the senior positions met each other at family gatherings. So like it's like that with a lot of major companies, which was actually to go off on a bit of a tangent, was kind of why when Satoru Iwata became president of Nintendo, it was kind of a big thing.
Yeah,
because right. because the previous guy just said the CEOs, rather than hire within the family, chose Iwata, and that helped Nintendo a lot.
Yeah, so, no, obviously.
But yeah, but it's still Japanese corporations are very, very, very old in that regards. They're very ancient in that regards, where they like to keep, you know, family in the upper tier positions. Mm-hmm. So the manager, who was the person who managed SMAP, she was their personal manager, and I think she was with them from the start.
Yes, yeah. She was.
She like, from the very beginning, like, when they were just a fledgling boy band, and when there were six members instead of five back then.
Yep.
And, yeah, they lost one member kind of early on.
Very early on, right. Yeah.
And she basically said, all right, I'm taking SMAP and leaving. You know, and they...
Four of them said, okay, and one of them said, no.
Well, the thing was that I think...
maybe not.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. He didn't say, no, I'm staying with Johnny's. Until, like, a little later, there was, like, a time delay between him saying that. Uh-huh. And they had actually found a different production company who was willing to take them in. But the conditions were that it was all five of them or nobody. It's like, for all of you, you know, this other production company said, we want SMAP, all of them, or the deal's off. Like, we're not taking anybody. And mm-hmm. when... That one guy, Takara Kimura, who happens to be one of...
Kind of the biggest one.
Yeah, the most popular.
He's not the leader of the band, but no. He is the, like, face of it.
Yeah, I think he was, like, I mean, he's probably... I'm not sure, but he was probably, like, Japan's, like, sexiest celebrity for a while. He was headlining tons of dramas.
He's all over the damn place.
He has a movie career, and he's actually a pretty decent actor.
Yeah, he's a comedy actor.
Most of the time, but there was
I haven't seen him in any dramas, but
there was the Jidaigeki, the one about where he plays a poison tester for a noble, and he basically gets poisoned and loses his eyesight. He goes blind.
Huh.
And so he has to figure out, like, how to live as a blind, you know, as a blind samurai.
Hmm.
And I mean, because I know about this because I actually heard stories about, like, how dedicated he was into getting into that role. And I've actually seen the movie, and you can tell, like, he's more than most of the other actors. He's really into it, like, into understanding, like, everything about what it would meant to be a samurai, like how to walk, how to sit, how to stand, everything.
Hmm.
And so everything I've heard about him from people who have worked with him is that, like, he is really dedicated. If he takes a job, he takes a job. He doesn't half-ass anything. So, I mean, he probably gets that because he has a lot to lose, I guess. I mean, but he is basically the face of the biggest boy band in Japan.
Yeah.
So he has a lot of, he has a lot of pride in that. And so he said, no, I'm not, I'm sticking back with Johnny's. And this led to, and I think that was around the time when I started hearing about the SMAPs breaking up sort of thing and everybody talking about it. And what happened next was on, I think it was Monday night. They have their regular SMAP has their regular TV show, and instead they preempted the show and had a live
press conference.
It was a live on air apology.
Yeah,
which seemed really strange because most people were wondering who do they have to apologize to, and basically all five of them got, you know, they're all dressed in black suits and they're stood in front of the camera and basically said, we're sorry for the trouble we've caused, you know, the people, the public, and we're sorry to the production company, Johnny's Entertainment. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Johnny's is kind of evil, and
yeah.
I'll explain why, because like that's a big thing to say. Mm-hmm. But basically, what you have to understand is like in America we have singers, right?
Oh, yeah.
A singer is a singer, and sometimes they do acting, and 99.9% of the time they're terrible at it, right?
Yeah.
They get their one crap movie, Spice mm-hmm. Girls, or how about who else had one? Kelly Clarkson, I think, had one.
Yep. Well, Miley Cyrus has a few. But
at least Miley Cyrus did acting as well as singing the whole time. Yeah. You know what I mean? But who else was it? Mariah Carey had one that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's like it. But by and large, in Japan, if you're a singer, you're probably also an actor.
Yeah.
And the trick is this, is Johnny's is easily the biggest of these.
Yeah.
And are very well known for making produced boy bands and, you know, produced female girl bands and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And the trick is, imagine that you are, say, you know, a television executive, and you're like, oh man, I want people to watch this new drama. So for our lead character, we should cast, you know, hot young boy band singer right now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, but you pissed off Johnny's 3 weeks ago by not, you know, hiring one of their lesser known talents for another show, right?
Yeah.
Too bad. You've been blacklisted. Your entire network's been blacklisted.
Yeah.
Every variety show, every quiz show, every politics show, everything. You're blacklisted. Too bad. You're screwed. You can't use any of their actors. You can't use any of. So you basically lose like a giant chunk of anybody you could use.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of it.
And with that, a giant chunk of your audience.
Right. And then they just go to, you know, Johnny's doesn't have any problems, you know, selling to the networks that'll play ball. So all of the networks play ball.
Yeah. Like, it's this vicious cycle where.
And don't get me wrong, like the singers and actors, they don't get paid crap.
Yeah.
They make very little money off of an incredible amount of hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything they do is, like, what was the big SMAP scandal? Was it SMAP, I think? Was that one of them got married?
That would be Takuya Kimura.
Yeah.
He got married.
And, like, the idea that he got married was a scandal. Do you understand that? Like, a scandal. Because, oh no, he has to be single so he attracts the female audience.
Yep. That's why for the girl bands, for like AKB 48 and things like that, it's actually in their, like, they cannot date. They're not allowed to date.
Or they're kicked out of the group.
Yeah. Or they have to, going back to it again, make a public apology. So
yeah, like, oh, I am sorry that I found someone in this world I love. My bad. Like, but they have to actually say it, like, I've disappointed my fans.
Yeah.
Sorry, if the fans can't get over the fact you're a person, then maybe you shouldn't. But well, that's who they're pandering to.
Getting into that, that's the idol area, where an idol is, they become property of everyone, is the thing.
Yeah.
That's the basic mindset behind it, is that an idol belongs to everybody, so they can't belong to a single person. But
But that's the harsh stuff, you know. Yeah.
So basically what happened was, so SMAP with only four members and nowhere to go. And that's the thing, is that, like, if you cross Johnny's, your career is ostensibly over.
Yeah.
Like,
you might be the
biggest hotshot, like, you might have been selling, you know, you might be the Japanese Johnny Depp. No one will take you.
Because it's suicide. Yeah. Suicide for your entire network or your entire recording company. That even a group had the balls to be like, yeah, if we get all of SMAP, we'll totally go against Johnny's. Mm-hmm. That's crazy talk.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping that it would happen because, like, you know, Johnny's evil and all that stuff.
Yeah. So
it's a brutal, brutal thing. Yeah. And that's why it kind of makes such big news, is because,
all the newspapers, news networks equated the public apology as a public execution.
Yeah.
Because what happened was Johnny's basically said to SMAP was, okay, we'll let you back, but you gotta humiliate yourself on live television by apologizing to us.
Like,
you have to, you know, kiss our ass. And then we'll think about letting you stay with us.
Yep.
Because, like, you know, you guys said you were leaving. You can leave. You don't have any careers anymore. You'll never work again as an actor or anything. Maybe you can go flip burgers somewhere, 40-year-old person. Have fun. But you'll never work again in the entertainment industry. Or you can kiss our ass. Maybe we'll think about it.
Yeah. No, and that it was a public execution. It was, this is what happens to people who cross us. It doesn't matter if you're SMAP or a new hire.
Yeah.
You're screwed.
Yeah. And so, yeah, there was, and that was, that a public apology was when, like, that was like a couple weeks ago, last week or a couple weeks ago?
Last week, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been about, I'd say 10, 11 days. Mm-hmm. And there's no telling what's going to happen now because, you know, it's really, I feel sorry for the other four members of SMAP. Like the guys who wanted to leave,
yeah, to get out from under, like, because, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like I said, it's not like they're living the super high life.
Yeah,
that's not what they're getting.
Yeah,
they you know, their talent. They're an endlessly popular boy band. They have been for decades now. They certainly deserve far more than they're getting, because literally they're doing concerts and TV shows every week, you know?
Yeah.
Like, holy crap, for years and years, and they just get nothing.
Yeah. All of a sudden, all gone. And
yeah, and now basically it's like, oh, look, you know how your contract was up in 2 months? Oh, you're gonna love that. And actually that's what's coming up.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like September, their contracts all come up. And how much do you want to bet that their contract is going to be like,
yeah,
you make $5 for the next 5 years.
Yeah, like for
$1 a year.
For each TV show you do, you give us about 90% now.
Yeah, you may have been getting. You know, it'll probably be even like, I seriously think it'll be like 99%. It'll be like you were getting 10%. Yeah. Now you're getting 1%.
Yeah.
See what happens. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, this was the chance. This was a chance for somebody to stand up and be like, yeah, this is bull.
Yeah.
And, nope.
Yeah, but technically it's not a monopoly, but yeah.
It's not a monopoly if you have driven everyone else out of business, right?
Yeah. But yeah, so that's, yeah, Johnny's Entertainment is evil incarnate. And yeah, it's really sick. I mean, and the one word I would use to describe this whole thing is, and this gets into kind of video games with everything that happened with Konami and Hideo Kojima, was they're insanely petty. I don't know most people, but like, in a sane world, you know, a contracted employee says, I want to work elsewhere. Within the confines of their contract, and you say, you know, generally, you would let them go, I would think.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but
no. You got that non-compete clause, and you're going to use that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I think you underestimate how dickish 99.9% of all companies anywhere are.
Yeah, but that's
like
the thing.
Like, and most people, if you have the non-compete compete clause,
yeah,
you use that non-compete clause.
Yeah, so that's actually going why, you know, the whole thing with Hideo Kojima not you know, getting banned from going to an award ceremony by Konami's lawyers, you know, and all that, because, like, even, I mean, getting into the thing with Hideo Kojima, the whole thing with, like, deleting PT, like, getting rid of it, the whole scrubbing his name from Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, which is just so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I could see them just like, if they were mad, if they're saying, all right, think, you know, deal's off, you work until here and then you're done, get your game out, you're contracted to, you're obliged to, you know, get the game out the door. I could see it, like, ending there. It didn't have to go any further than that. And yet, you know, they decided to go the extra mile. I mean, even with PT, even if it never became anything, even if Silent Hills never became anything, and PT, let's face it, was a tech demo. It was nothing but a tech demo for the Fox engine, but it was to justify the existence of the Fox engine. It was just, but it was a just to show its potential, but it could still. It had potential in there, even if they didn't end up using the Fox engine or anything like that. But they just said, wipe everything. Gone. Completely. And it just kind of shows just how petty these companies can be. And it's on, like, it's really childish, I guess the word would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, even and in Japan, the whole thing with the public apology, it being a public execution, all Japan, especially in older companies, they still have that sort of old samurai bushido thing, where your honor, sacrifice.
Debase yourself before me.
Yeah, it is in a way, it's a fate worse than death. It's
Oh yeah, but like yeah, they just have everybody when it comes to the boys bands. You know, they got. They have everything from Cartoon and News and Arashi and Scrap and Heisei Jump and what is it? Kiss My Feet? Is that how you're supposed to say that one? I've never actually asked.
No idea.
Yeah, that one's super popular.
Yep. Right and now. What else was there? The list goes on. Like every. How long have they been in business? Like how 80s? Many decades?
John's. Oh, 1962.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah, because I remember some of the early ones of theirs back in the '80s and stuff like that. I think I think when they had the Johnny's Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God.
Yeah, that was what 75.
Yeah, easy to say in Japanese, hard to say in English. But the Johnny's Juniors, which is basically a branch of the production group which dealt with boy bands, and I think like one of the prerequisites of being an artist for Johnny's Junior wasn't your singing ability; it was that you could do a backflip.
Well, and that's one of those things, right? Like especially with SMAP is. Very famously, I don't remember which one it is, but one of the members cannot sing.
That's the leader, Nakai. He is terrible at singing.
Yeah, just utterly tone deaf. Like, so tone deaf, they cut his mic.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Now remember, he is a successful singer
who's
been singing for over 2 decades at this point.
Yeah.
But the man is tone deaf.
Yeah. I think that, like, every now and then they'll make a joke of it. Like, they'll make him sing on mic live somewhere.
Yeah, it's not a secret. It's just like, yeah, that's how it is. And look at that. You people buy anything.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's corporate Japan.
But, yeah, I'm impressed, actually, that the newspapers actually were calling it a public execution. Because the newspapers are also have, you know, relationships. It's, oh, you wanted an interview with our pop stars? Not anymore.
Yep.
Sorry, you've been blacklisted. Like, that's literally how it works. They strong-arm everyone.
Yeah.
They strong-arm everything.
Because they can.
Because they can. Yeah. There's no one that can stop them.
Hopefully, I don't know, I was hoping this, like, SMAP leaving, because I'd been talking with friends, too. It's like, yeah, it's about time that SMAP, you know, they maybe broke apart and everybody did their own thing. You know, that would be nice. You know, I mean, kind of like pass the torch on, because Arashi is now the big thing. They're the big name now. So just like, you know, pass the torch on, move on with their careers, go to, you know, focus on acting or other things.
Never.
Yeah.
They will be a boy band till the day they die.
And
they have no choice in the matter.
Yep. Oh, indentured servitude. Oh.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yep.
It's just crazy. Just terrible stuff. But hey, I'm sure we'll be revisiting this in September or whatever when their contracts are actually up, and we'll see if some other company has the balls to try to steal them all away again, which is possible.
Hopefully, because like even the news sort of pointing at the fact that the whole public execution thing, hopefully this will change some things.
Not a chance.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, honestly, if anything, it's just going to make Johnny's be a little more careful. It's not going to really change their practices, but no. I can hope that something changes.
Yeah.
But anyways, that has been the news for this episode, I guess. So, anyways, I think we'll put in a break, and we'll go on to the next second half of this podcast. And what I wanted to talk about is we have I wanted us to have a topic to talk about for each episode, and it's been rather well known that the owner of our site, Chris, does not watch anime, and it's not for not liking anime. He actually loves Miyazaki anime, and he loves the anime movies. It's just that he does not have time for a series because he already has to watch so much stuff, because watching 50 movies a week does not really lend itself to a lot of free time to watch the stuff you actually want to watch, whether you want to watch it or not. So,
oh, hey, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, you know that. You're on the other end of that. But so, I mean, notoriously, anime is something that has not been covered a lot on our site. And considering that the Wayward Podcast is a Japan-centric podcast, the topic of anime and manga and Japanese subculture is kind of unavoidable. So I figured, why not? So after the break, I guess we'll come back for our topic du jour.
Oh yeah.
So, for our topic this episode, I actually wanted to bring up some a fairly popular series in Japan. It's the Fate series.
Yeah.
So, I don't think many people have heard about this series outside of Japan. Maybe they've seen the anime, maybe not. But I guess we should give a refresher on what this Fate series is. It's a series from a company called Type Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Which was originally, they started in doujin. They started in indie stuff.
Yep.
I think their first game was Tsukihime.
Yeah. Yeah.
They started in indies. They sold at Comiket, and I think Fate was their third game. Was it like they had a fighting game in between there or something like that?
I'm not really sure about like the chronology. I know that Fate Stay Night is actually a very very early one in there.
Well, there are two main people involved in the development of their games. Currently the president and one of them's the president of their company. But yeah, I think Fate was something that they had worked on. They had thought up a while back. And I might have been. Do you know if it was before their first game or Tsukihime or not?
When it was thought up?
Yeah, when it was the inception of it.
No. Nope. Okay. But I do know. It came out in 2004. Tsukihime came out in 2000.
Yeah.
And several games were actually released between the two, including the first Melty Blood, which was a fighting game, but also a sequel to Tsukihime.
I think the sequel was actually like it's. Well, the thing was with Tsukihime was they released it in like segments. And then they released because they're making it as their, you know, and bringing whatever they had to each Comiket, and like selling it basically in chapters. I think that's because that's what they did with Nakakoroni. Was it Higurashi ga Nakakoroni? That's what they did with that too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Higurashi, they released it in chapters.
Sorry, that's Higurashi when they cry. That's what he's talking about there.
Yeah, oh. but the Fate series was their first. Published
like, breakout. It was breakout. That's what it was.
Yeah, I mean the Tsukihime series did the Tsukihime game did have its own following, but it was modest compared to what Fate brought. So Fate, what is it? Fate/Stay Night,
mm-hmm.
or Fate/Stay/Night? What is it?
No, it's Fate/Stay Night.
Okay, Fate. Yeah, the Fate really odd use of punctuation. But
look, if Nitro Plus can do it with the semicolon, Type Moon can do it with the forward slash. It's cool. Okay. It's cool.
So Fate Stay Night, what is it about? It's non-spoilers, what is Fate Stay Night about?
Set in basically the modern day, give or take, early 2000s.
Yeah.
In basically our world.
Yeah.
There's a Harry Potter-esque magic society, we'll say, across the world. There's magicians all over the world.
Well, it's a modern fantasy.
Yeah, it's a modern fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's not. I don't think magic is common knowledge, but there are magicians around the world.
Yeah. And one thing that I'm sorry to cut in. The one thing that the series this is actually something that comes from, I believe it comes from Tsukihime, but something they make very clear is that there's a distinction between sorcery and magic.
Yeah.
There's a very, very definite line between, because the magic that they use is based in real, somewhat in real physics. Like there's this sort of astral plane. There's stuff like that, like stuff you hear in a lot of comic books and stuff like that. But it does have its own rules. It's not. You can't do.
Oh yeah,
anything.
No. Well, no. It's not. It's magic. It's okay. It's what we call a hard magic system.
Yeah.
Where you have rules.
Yeah.
There's soft magic system, which is I can just. It's magic. It can do anything, right? And then there's hard magic systems, which are things like what Brandon Sanderson likes to put down on paper, which are why his fantasy is so good. And that's fine. You can do either, but like that's there are rules. Let's be serious. Yeah. Like you can't break certain rules. You can do certain things. You can't do other things. And it's all spelled out.
Yeah, there's a limit to it's like an RPG. It takes energy to do something, things like that. Like you can't just flick of a wand and then something happens that's what happens. It's like it expends some sort of energy.
Energy from somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But basically it's the story of in this world where yes, magic and magicians exist,
It's an underground society. We should probably specify
that.
I said that
several times.
Sorry.
I said that three times now. But basically what they do is, in this certain city in Japan, it's the site of a ritual known as, they call it the Holy Grail War. And what it is, I believe, what is it, seven magicians?
Yes.
Seven magicians are chosen by the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And what then they are each paired with a famous figure from history or myth.
Known as a servant.
Yeah, known as a servant. The masters and the servants. So the magicians and the heroes. Mm-hmm. And so they each are split into pairs and they fight it out. And whoever wins gets basically a free, unbridled wish from the Holy Grail. True magic.
Yeah.
It's the
one case in that world of true magic.
Yeah. Where it's anything can happen from it, and what the series in general about is various. They call it the Holy Grail War, even though it's yes, I get it, seven people and 14 people total, but yes, they call it the Holy Grail War, and it's about the various Holy Grail Wars that have happened, and the original one happening in the mid to early 2000s.
Yeah,
and that's what it's about.
Yeah. And there, to go over some of the rules of the Grail Wars is that, for one thing, is that the servants are generally based on historical, notorious or very famous figures or heroes,
out of legend or myth. It can be either.
Generally, one thing is that they set rules, but the whole story is about breaking these rules.
Yeah.
So, like, one of the rules is that you can't summon gods. Gods are kind of, they're a different dimension altogether. But if a god is, I guess you could say, significantly weakened or scaled down, you can summon a sort of essence of a god.
All right, you were way, way the hell ahead. Like, there's no god summoning in Fate Stay Night.
But the whole thing is about, okay, sorry about that. But the
like,
whole
that's
thing
so
is
far ahead.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, that's sure, yeah. That's something, but, like, the thing is, this is evolved, of course.
Yeah.
You know, it started off and it was, you know,
just
seven famous people, seven modern-day magicians, fighting it out, and it's okay. It's a, I don't think it's actually, I would never say it's great. I'd say it's entertaining. The cool thing about it was it had three vastly different stories in the first game.
Yeah.
Three different routes that each are dramatically different from the others, and each have revelations that are not present in the other ones.
Yeah.
So, to get back
to the rules.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
The thing about the servants is that they are divided into seven classes.
Yeah, usually something attached to their mythology.
Who they were.
What are the
classes? There's Saber, which is a sword fighter.
Saber, Lancer, Archer.
Sure.
And then the other side is Caster, Rider, Assassin. And then the final one is Berserker.
Yeah. And who a person and another interesting thing is that they actually mentioned this in the story is that a person can fall into multiple categories.
Yeah, different aspects of people can be summoned. Let's say,
because this is actually what I was leading to with talking about gods. Odin, he rides a six-legged horse, Sleipnir, so technically he could be a rider. But he uses the Lance of Gungnir, so he could be a lancer. But he has the all-seeing eye, so technically he could be a caster. So, I mean, so a hero or a legend can fall into each category, but due to the rules of the game, they are tied to that category. They're tied to that class.
Yeah, you're not technically summoning the person as much as you are summoning an aspect of the person.
Yeah. And the thing about them is that when they are summoned, this is also kind of, this goes into the true magic part of the story, but when they are summoned, they are summoned with the necessary knowledge of the world, of when and where they are.
Yeah.
Like, they know history.
Yeah, so, well, they don't, that's not entirely true.
Yeah.
They don't know history, but they do know language, and they know what things are.
They know the necessary history.
Like, yeah.
They know how to use things. They know, like, there's public waterworks.
Sure.
I mean, they might know that. I mean, they know that people have electricity. They're not, oh my god, what is this newfangled...
Yeah, they're not strangers in a strange land.
Yeah.
But they don't, like for example, who's somebody I could do it. Since I don't believe he's ever been summoned in any of the series, and I could be wrong, and I'm sorry if I am, let's take Jesus. Mm-hmm. Right? If you summon Jesus into our time period, he would know any language. He would know how to drive a car. Mm-hmm. He would know what electricity is. He would know that. However, he wouldn't know about the Bible.
Yeah.
Right? He would not know his own story. He would not know his effect on the world. Mm-hmm. He would not know any of that. He might know what a church is, but he wouldn't necessarily know how it relates to him.
And there's also when they're summoned. Like, if it's an actual historical figure, they could be summoned from a certain part in their life.
Yeah, yeah. Although, again, that's another thing that's not in the original, but is something that, you know, as the rules get bent, you're able to summon. We get people from different ages, from different times.
Okay. So, getting back to the original first Fate Stay Night, it was... because I keep branching out from it. But the original first was, I think it was the Fifth Grail Wars?
Yeah, I believe it's the fifth. Yeah.
Okay. And the Fifth Grail Wars, and it's a story about somewhat an unlikely hero.
It's basically a guy who, like, even people, not everybody's part of a magical society.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have magic and just be a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know that magic. You know magic exists. You know other people have magic, but you may not be part of anything greater than that. And that's normal. You just don't walk around showing magic because you're not stupid, right? And it's about a guy who has a high schooler, of course, who has a very
limited
ability with magic.
Yeah, because he was the adopted son of a fairly powerful.
Yeah, so he doesn't have any special bloodline or anything, but he does have a little bit of knowledge of magic, and, like, that's it. And by a mixture of chance and perhaps the Grail itself...
Fate, perhaps?
Yeah, right, exactly. He ends up summoning one of the heroes.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it basically kind of becomes this thing. It's interesting though, because it almost one of the rules is broken by him even being in the Holy yeah. Grail War, which is yeah. everybody has to have you have to have a goal. You have to have something yeah. you really want.
Yeah.
And
you have to have
or the Grail won't care.
The Grail. Yeah. 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 You have to want the Grail for something.
Yeah. And yeah. you have to. And yeah. they'll get me wrong, like it's really cool. Well, that's of course part of the cool things about it is you get to see not only the mythical heroes why they want the Grail, but yeah. also, you know, why the modern day mages want the Grail. Yeah. And
because yeah, the servants also have a reason.
Yeah.
The servants themselves I have a deal with the Grail, I guess you could say. The yeah. summoned servants. Yeah. So it's, and one of the most interesting aspects of the original Fate was that it is the story of the Fifth Grail Wars, but it has a very strong backstory with the Fourth Grail Wars. Because yeah. something happened.
Although, yeah, you don't really yeah. learn too much about it, though.
Actually, you do.
Well,
you've played the original
I've
game.
I've played right? part of the original game. Yeah. Like, cause, again, it's a very massive game with several routes.
Yeah.
So, but, I'll just leave it at that.
And actually, if anyone's interested in this, I believe the first, the main, it's called the Saber Route. But the Saber Route is actually available free on iTunes. I believe it's in Japanese, though. I don't
yeah,
know if this is
it's never received an official
yeah, that's,
Western
That's
release.
One of the unfortunate things. This is a very entertaining series, I would call it, say. A very entertaining, because
yeah.
The whole thing has a whole lot of potential, but I'll get to that. But one thing that they do talk about in the story of Fate of a lot of stuff that happened in the Fourth Grail Wars.
Yeah. Like, you learn what happened, but you learn very little about the why. Ins and outs yeah. of why it happened.
Yeah. So it, but it expanded the world itself. It's one of those things where one of those stories where like you're kind of in a way you're reading the epilogue.
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, yeah. Well, okay, the story, the previous Grail War was adapted into a series of novels, and it's called yeah. Fate Zero as opposed yeah. to Fate Stay Night. Yeah. And yeah, Fate Zero does kind of feel like the real story, or at least the first half of the story.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you really want to get down to it, what it's really about is it's really about the main character's servant.
Yeah.
Which is the Saber yeah. class. And it's really her story.
Yeah.
And basically her rise and fall.
Yeah.
And
why she
rebirth.
Why she wants yeah why yeah. she wants the Grail, what she wants from the Grail, and what happens.
Yeah. So. And it's a very, very structured thing that ends at a legend we all know, you know, ends mm-hmm. like it begins with the legend we all know, mm-hmm. you know, that ends in death because they all do. And yeah. then, you know, it becomes the story of like the disillusionment and the fall. And then mm-hmm. it becomes the story of redemption and rebirth. And it's basically a three part so, story, one part yep. a legend. And then the other two parts that. Yeah. And
it's for both Fate Zero and one of the routes of Fate Stay Night have been adapted
two of the routes.
Oh, two. Sorry, other routes have been adapted into anime.
Mm-hmm.
And
the third one will probably come out this year as a movie.
So, if you were going to suggest someone watch the anime because the mm-hmm. games, while they do, they are the original Fate Stay Night is for the PC.
Yeah.
It's out on the PC, and there are fan subs, like people who have made fan patches, like English yeah. patches for the games. So if you manage to purchase a copy or obtain a copy, you can patch it and get English English text. But if you were to experience Fate or Fate Zero, the anime, just talking the anime, what order would I say? Would you suggest they watch it?
And this is by the way, this is very much not what most people would say. Mm-hmm. I would say start with Zero.
Mm.
I think Zero is the best. It's starting with the best. And, it's also the darkest and the most well-written.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because its author is not the author of Fate Stay Night.
No.
Its author is Gen Urobuchi, who yeah. is... Urobuchi.
Yeah.
The also known as The Butcher. who has written things like Madoka Magica and yep. Gargantua. Yep. What else did he write? Psycho Pass.
Yeah. He's a writer who's very good at world building and letting it, and I would say making organic events.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because like he obviously had a very strict framework he had to adhere to.
Yeah.
Wow, is Fate Zero dark? It is very, very dark. And I would say the first episode or so is pretty confusing.
Yeah.
Because it almost assumes you've played or seen Fate Stay Night.
You get into it real quick.
You just accept that you're going to be confused for a little bit, and then it'll start to all make total sense. But I like it because it's a dark, tragic story. It's got some really good twists in it. Fantastic animation, fantastic action. It's really the best you're going to get out of the whole series.
The production company, the animation company, is Ufotable. How's it pronounced?
I think that's what it is. I think that's how they do it. It's UFO Table, but I think they call it Ufotable.
And they are an animation studio that has gained a lot of popularity because they're really good.
Yeah, their quality is good, and their action is fantastic. It's basically it's an action zero. Zero, especially, is an action show with incredibly deep themes.
Yes.
Fate Stay Night, not as much.
Yeah, Fate Stay Night
is more just action-adventure, you're on for the ride.
I think Fate Stay Night is it feels younger. Not only because the main character is a lot younger, but it feels... It's more an adolescent story, whereas Fate Zero is an adult dealing with...
Adult issues.
So, but as a whole, what would you say is the appeal of the Fate series?
Oh, it's got two big things. The first one is, it's all these people from myth and legend that you know. And you get to see them reimagined in really cool ways.
That's one of the love.
And that stuff. And of course, the biggest thing they do is to cater to the male fan base is the gender swapping.
Yes.
Not all, by any stretch of the imagination, but a good percentage of, mythical or past heroes throughout history are gender swapped. Others are not. I mean, obviously, and that's the whole thing, is because of the way we have traditionally viewed and built history, males are more prominent.
Yeah.
And so they just really decided that, vast majority of them, totally pretending.
These people were actually female.
These were all actually female, just deal with it. And they were just hiding it.
And it's actually, I like it better that way. It does, that aspect of it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Sometimes, yes, they actively hid their genders.
Yeah.
Other times, history just was rewritten. It's like, no, you're male this history book. Deal with it. And so you get funny things like that. And, you know, different characters react in different ways. Some are incredibly, I guess, happy to be perceived as male. Others,
some,
not so much.
Some of them, it's kind of convoluted.
Yeah. Some of them have very mixed feelings about this. Yeah.
Some of it, it's really convoluted as to why they were actually female.
Yeah. Or that's like, true, too.
If you look at their legends or history or what's written about them, part of it does kind of force fit, like, but they were actually female.
Yeah, because you get certain things like, that person had a wife and a kid.
Yeah, according to the legends, he had a wife and a kid, but it's a she.
So that's interesting.
But this is why that works, sort of thing.
Yeah, so. but it has fun with the history. It's one of those really fun, like, when you mix sci-fi or magic with, what is it called? When you can use any character because they've been around for so long. My English fails me. It's not Creative Commons, but you know what I mean. Like that whole thing.
It's like the stuff with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, exactly. You have fun with these characters everybody knows about, and you can twist them and make them your own unique way. Yeah. It's good stuff.
And I think that would be a kind of, I'm not, obviously it's not an exact comparison, but that would be a good way, interesting way of describing it. In a way, that's one of the aspects of it, the fact that these characters that you know about, but their its own depiction of them. Is in a way you could say it's kind of like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, although they're not necessarily working together.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and it's it turns out, you know, it's become this big, massive, sprawling thing with alternate universes and various sequels and spin-offs. And
the story is that the original story of Fate Stay Night, because where they all started was, it was the Fifth Grail Wars. It also deals with the Fourth Grail Wars, but they bring up a whole bunch of other ones.
Yeah, we have all these other ones, like the third one was on the eve of World War II, but we and we learn about that through some other materials, which sometimes, you know, cause timeline splits, and then we learn about other ones. They have fun with it. You know, they're going with it. Yeah, with it without messing up what they've done before.
That's one of the things, really good things that the series did, was that it created set up a very expansive world that you could let your imagination run free with.
Yeah.
Which is one of the appeals of it. And even the original series itself does a good, very good job of playing with that in that sandbox that they've created.
Yeah.
So.
And so, yeah, it's a fun ride. That's really what it is. Zero's the best. It's arguably the prettiest, either it or Unlimited Blade Works. The thing is, like, the original Fate Stay Night, when it was adapted into an anime, the anime is older now and shows it. Even though it was in the mid-2000s, and
Originally an OVA?
No, I think it was a full series.
Full
26 episodes, I think. Maybe 24. Sorry, don't remember off the top of my head. But its problem is they did what often happens with visual novels that have several routes. They try to incorporate everything into one thing. So you get this weird mixture. It's mostly the story about his saber. It's mostly that. But then they drag in weird things that from the other two story arcs. So you get this. It doesn't really do it.
Mesh well. Yeah.
Not compared to either of the other two, which is the other version of the story, Unlimited Blade Works, or Fate Zero. It's one of those things. But yeah, I enjoy it. I would never list it on top 50 anime or anything like that. But it's fun. It's fun, and people are having fun with their imagination to recreate all these characters and give them their own histories and personalities.
And one of the things we've been doing is recently we've both been heavily into. A new game, a new freemium game, smartphone game called Fate Grand Order, which basically gives you a whole plethora of different types of servants. So
yeah, it's a very cool game where they've it has a pretty good plot, enjoyable plot anyway.
It is written by the original writer of the original game,
at least parts of it, not all of it.
He has always. I mean, I've having played playing the original Fate. He's a very good wordsmith. He likes to use a lot of very difficult words, but his writing is actually really, really good. So,
What do we want to call it? An alternate universe story, but it's basically about a group of time travelers. Who have noticed that certain Grail Wars throughout history have gone horribly, horribly wrong and are trying to fix it.
Yeah.
And they use that as an excuse to drag in every possible historical figure from every one of the other books and games and movies.
And every
and
possible
anime,
servant that
they've
ever designed.
And then any more they can think of.
Yeah. How many are there so far?
We're in the 80s, at least at this point.
And we already know that they're going to have at least 50 more or something like that.
I think it hits 150, honestly. Yeah.
How many they've got scheduled.
Yeah, yeah. That's just the ones that have been data mined out of the game. I think... I'm looking right now at the list. Yeah, it's about 150 right now.
Yeah. For Fate Grand Order, which I think has been consuming a good portion of our off podcast conversations.
It really has. It's nice to have somebody to play with. I wouldn't be playing this if you weren't. I would have lost interest. yeah, being able to talk about it. It's an interesting one. I like it a lot more than any other free-to-play Japanese game like this that I've played.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because all the characters... I know of almost all the characters. Mm-hmm. Not because of the anime, but because of...
History,
right? History and legend, mythology, right?
Yeah.
And then also, you know, you can take the characters from the books and all that stuff, and you're like, oh yeah, I know them too. Whoa, you know, and you get this.
And
real
you get to see things about their legends,
yeah,
incorporated into their character, either their design or their character stats, right, or whatever.
And then you get lots and lots of what ifs of, mm-hmm, of other characters,
yeah,
which are, is a lot of fun.
That is something we're slowly veering into spoiler territory, yeah, but one thing that is mentioned was that, as we said, multiple versions of the same person.
Yeah.
Can be summoned, and they can sometimes be summoned to different classes. Right. And I think they actually mention, I think in the original game, that like in a previous Grail War, that the same servant,
one of them was
the same person, just to two different classes.
Yeah, yeah, the Lancer of Fate, yeah, Fate Stay Night is, yeah, revealed to have also been a caster in the past.
Yeah. And things like that. So, yeah. Not just that, but not just as a caster, but like in the very same war, the same person was summoned twice. Hmm. Which is
another interesting thing. And it's, yeah, kind of cool like that. I like it. But like, for example, they've been doing this really cool thing where each period of history they go to, you know, they'll bring characters from that time period in that area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got a whole bunch of Roman characters in ancient Rome.
Yep.
In Joan of Arc's France, we got Joan and a whole bunch of other people.
Yep.
In
London.
London, we got basically every British steampunk person you could think of.
Yep.
Like, we got Jekyll and Hyde. We got things, mm-hmm, like that. And I actually say their names because they're only in Grand Order, right?
Yeah.
Or that's... At least we're specifically, yeah, talking about Grand Order at this point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you get all these characters like that. And then the next event, which is I'm actually looking forward to, is probably going to be 99% new characters, because it's America.
Mm.
So I'm really interested to see what a group of Japanese game creators think of when they think of who are legendary American heroes. Like, yeah, that's a really cool kind of idea.
Yeah.
So I'm interested.
Not only because American lore is kind of short in, yeah, comparison to other countries.
Yeah.
Only about 600 years of stuff to mine. But so, I mean, and...
You have no idea how old America is, do you?
Speaking from a Japanese perspective, you know what they're going to... Like, they're going,
right,
to... They're, right, not going to be going way, way back. I mean, obviously they can.
Yeah.
There is stuff.
Like, I still hope for a George Washington. It hasn't been leaked, but I would love George Washington with an axe, like as, yeah, a berserker. Just.
It would be interesting if it was
enraged George Washington killing
and because,
people with an
axe. Because this is something that they do in the Fate series, who do you think they're going to gender bend?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's another one. Like, it's, yeah, like, who are these? Like, for example, some of the ones that we know are coming in the America-centric update is, like, Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm.
Or, what was it? Was it Geronimo? Is that who I said
think,
earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. We were having... Calamity Jane is going to be in it. Billy the Kid.
Mm. I bet Billy the Kid's going to be gender bent.
Yeah, probably. almost certainly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's stuff like that, and then like I think Marie Curie, you know. So it's stuff like that, and it's. I'm just interested. I really want to see like what they have decided our historical heroes are.
Mm.
As an American.
One thing they do avoid is very recent ones, though. So I don't. Do you think they? I don't think they'd do something like Martin Luther King or Abraham Lincoln. Do you?
Well, we have characters newer than Lincoln.
Mm. Right,
because we have like Sherlock Holmes is
true. So
yeah,
like, but that is Fate Grand Order. Actually, I've written a review of it on Kotaku.
Yes, yes.
So,
but yeah, you get fun things. You get like Shakespeare. Mm. You know,
it definitely cool plays on like one of that. the fun parts of the Fate series itself with that whole character imagining.
So. Yeah, and I think one of the later updates is going to be India and China. Mm. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, Indian and China heroes. We haven't really gone into that. That'll be cool. You know, so things like that all put together in.
But anyways, for the general American Western audience, currently available in terms of Fate, the easiest accessible would probably be the anime.
Oh,
Fate
absolutely.
Zero, Fate Unlimited Blade Works. Is the older Fate anime available?
On streaming? Maybe Hulu? I can look. I'll look right now. But okay. I know that Hulu has Zero and Hulu has... Unlimited Blade Works.
Those are the most recent ones. Those came out in the past three or four years or so. So, I mean, Unlimited Blade Works ended last season, was it? Or the season before that?
Two seasons ago.
So they're fairly recent, which also means their quality is really good. So,
yeah.
If you check them out, yeah, you will not be disappointed. You might be disappointed.
Oh, no, yeah, the original's up on Hulu.
Okay. The original, you might be disappointed by the animation
quality. Yeah, it's very surprising. It was a really big hit, too. Mm-hmm. I was in the middle of not watching anime at the time. Mm-hmm. But even I knew, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, oh, it's that character that's in everywhere.
Yeah. That's the thing is that the Fate, it spawned a massive fan base. I mean, it cemented Type Moon, which is the production company again, which is Type Moon as its own genre.
Yeah.
Fans consider it a Type Moon game of Type Moon genre.
Yeah.
So,
and it's funny because it's a huge, huge, big thing, even mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
I mean, even remember, this is a mobile game mm-hmm. in a country that thrives on mobile games. Like, there's a billion of them for every spinoff. And I mean, what was it? Over New Year's, they had a thing where they were just doing a live stream, right?
Yeah.
And all it was two of the voice actors talking for an hour.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they promised people, they're like, all right, well, if enough people watch, if enough people retweet, then we'll give you stuff in the game, right? And they lowballed it with, if we have 20,000.
Yeah.
There were hundreds of thousands of people watching the stream.
Yeah, and the site where you could retweet it crashed.
Crashed immediately. Immediately. Yeah. And they never got it. And they didn't get it back up before it, finished. And still, even then, their goal of, what was it, 30,000 retweets by the end of the broadcast hit 40,000.
Yeah.
And that was without people being able to look at the site. Yeah. And so, it does have a very dedicated fan base. And you can play it. Even outside of Japan, with some workarounds and stuff.
Yeah,
and there's a very dedicated Reddit community to it that I go to a lot, and they're good people.
And I mean, aside from the anime and Fate Grand Order, there also in Japan there are multiple books.
Multiple
book series. There's multiple.
There's two games that came out in America.
Oh, which
in
ones?
English.
Which ones?
I believe Extra and Extra CCC are both out in America.
The PSP games, yes.
Yep, they're both out.
Those are kind of a very different Grail Wars.
They very much are. But and they share some characters and then have a vastly different set of characters as well.
Yep.
Which is kind of cool.
Yep. So That is in a nutshell, I guess, in about half an hour, a little over. Mm. That is the Fate series that has been our topic for this week. Is there anything else you would like to add about it?
Yeah, just probably reiterating what I said. If you like history, if you want to see historical figures reimagined, like them being what their legends are, not like them being real people, but like the legend taking life and basically fighting it out.
Yeah.
If that sounds like fun,
yeah. Like if you imagine, like we're saying, Abe Lincoln fighting, I don't know,
Hitler. Yeah,
Hitler. Neither character has actually been designed as a servant, but because that's just to avoid spoilers. But if you wanted to see your favorite historical figures duke it out,
yeah.
And again, it's with the whole world building and all that too. But I'm sorry, I'll cut into you. What else?
No, but that's pretty much it. If you like that, if you want good action as well, and if you actually want a really deep, dark thematic story, definitely Fate Zero. Even if you don't watch anything else, if you don't care about where it goes from there, just Fate Zero is absolutely necessary. That, unlike Fate Stay Night or Unlimited Blade Works or the games or anything else, I would say that Fate Zero, the anime, is one of the one of the maybe best, at least 20, 30 best of the last 10 years or so.
Mm.
It's up there. Yeah. It's a solid, show. Especially if you like dark stuff. Especially if you like psychopaths.
Yeah, if you're kind of weak on the depression stuff, if you're looking for your standard, you know, happy, sparkly anime, maybe not for you.
Yeah, if you're looking for Naruto,
yeah, not
it's,
for you.
We're going darker. We're going several levels darker. Yeah. Not to say that Naruto doesn't have, you know, some dark stuff in it occasionally. It does.
Yeah. You know,
but it's not to belittle it or anything if you like
it's not a constant unending barrage.
It's despair incarnate. Like, that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to make you despair as much as it makes the characters despair.
Yeah.
Because
but it definitely makes you think.
Well, yeah, so. Because we have to get you there so that the original can happen.
Yeah. So, and yeah, getting back into the story, talk about like your favorite historical figures. If you're someone who's a stickler, like, that's not, like, again, if you have a problem with a character being gender bent, like not being who they were written as, being a different gender, that, then you might have problems. But if you can sit back and enjoy it, it's definitely worth a ride.
Yeah, no, it's all about if you like your historical fiction, you know, or your historical fantasy in this case.
All right. So that has been our podcast for this episode. This is the Wayward Podcast. Not exactly sure what topic we're going to cover next. But in the meantime, this is Toshi.
This is Richard.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Wayward Podcast is part of the oneofus.net podcast network. You can follow us on Twitter at Wayward Podcast or send your comments or questions to waywardpodcast@gmail.com.